Roll up. Welcome back to the Wrestling Podcast. That's wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G. We cover all the graps without the E. You know the deal by now. Do you need the whole spiel? Let's have the whole spiel. You know the deal. Me and G, we're not anti-E, we're simply pro-wrestling. My name is Liam, this guy is Gareth.
Hey.
And you, my friends, have once again very kindly joined us on the Inside the Ropes podcast network for the Wrestling Podcast. And we've got a great show for you today. We're all over the place. We're going to be talking about DDT, Impact Wrestling, and New Japan USA. So, Gareth, let's just jump straight on into it. We're looking at DDT's show from earlier in the week, the Go-To DDT Volume 1. What did you make of this show?
Heaps of fun, as always. Bookended by a super fun opening kind of silly comedy match. And ends with a very strong, fast-paced, enjoyable DDT Universal title match.
Yeah, for sure. I felt as a whole card, this one moved very smoothly along. It didn't drag or dip at any point. It's a very consistently enjoyable card that pretty much flew by.
Yeah, exactly. I just found it, you know how we've previously discussed how quite often if I'm watching a show back that's not live, you know, like I pause and I'll go off and like do something for 20 minutes and come back to it. But this one, yeah, I was engrossed and was more than happy to just kind of plow through it all in one sitting. I was absolutely, you know, engaged 100% of the time here.
Yep, same. Okay, so shall we try and break down this opening match? I say opening match, there was a dark match beforehand, which was perfectly enjoyable, but the opening match really was a comedy affair. It was a very interesting match. I'm going to let you have his first stab at it.
Because I'm you're nice too, like you're that. Too kind.
I am.
Building as an infomercial match. Basically, the match had all the wrestlers appearing in their street gear in order to then tax write off said clothing. Like, so they had a PowerPoint presentation given, giving information on the tax code in Japan for self-employed people, such as like independent contractors, light wrestlers.
Can you imagine if somebody had just skipped the intro and just wound it to here? They'd tune into a completely different podcast.
Which I thought was just ridiculous and brilliant and done in such a way that really only DDT does.
Yeah.
And also compounding the ridiculousness of this, one of the competitors, Super Sasadango Machine, couldn't make the show due to the heavy snow that's been happening in Japan recently. And so he had an avatar in this match that he controlled through. He was on Zoom throughout the match and was telling this avatar who was wearing his mask what to do in the match.
My favorite part of this was the avatar would literally stop if the guy stopped speaking. So if he didn't have an instruction, he'd just stop. It was fantastic.
It was so silly. And so it was a 8-person tag team match. The kind of notable people that I'm sort of most familiar with who were in this were Antonio Honda, who, if you watch Choco Pro as well, you'll be very familiar with. He had, you know, some of the most enjoyable matches in Choco Pro last year. His two matches against Lulu Pencil were some of my favorites. Sasadango Machine's avatar, Dino and Sakiaki and President Takagi, all on the other side as well. So four people on each side. And the kind of ones that really tickled me, so you're on one end of the spectrum, you had, prior to the match, they showed pictures of everybody in their gear for the match and ran down the value of their outfit that they could then tax write off. So on the lowest end of the spectrum, you had Antonio Honda appearing in a 20 yen valued outfit that he'd picked up in India. And then on the other end of the scale, you had Takagi wearing his sort of 100,000 yen watch in this match.
And that watch took a beating, which was unfortunate because it was revealed after the match that watches may not be tax deductible.
Oh, dear.
Do you know what? I really felt like I'd fully plugged into the DDT sense of humor with this one. I was laughing along with this.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You know, once again, with the help of DDT English Update, although I gather that by the time this goes out, DDT English Update may not be called DDT English Update. So we say a big thank you to Mr. Haku and the team for running that and helping us get introduced to DDT in a big way. But yeah, with that as a guide, I really did find this absolutely hilarious, really good fun.
And there was just like a lot of funny sort of spots here based around the wrestlers that didn't want their gear getting damaged. So you had Saki Akai protecting her fancy handbag and was, you know, got very upset anytime anyone tried to come near her and attack her bag. And obviously, like, Takagi at one point uses his gigantic, very expensive watch to issue some heavy-duty chops to his opponents.
That was an outrageous watch, to be fair. It looked like a Wonder Woman bracelet, didn't it?
This was so entertaining. Obviously, it's not a five-star classic in the technical sense, but I think, you know, you sit down and put on a show and start off with this, it just gets you warmed up in the best possible way.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that may well find itself onto the Wrestling 20 when we come to do that next year. All right, so moving up the card, you know, there's a lot of tag matches on this show, but it didn't hurt it one bit. You know, they each had a story and a place and a rationale, and it was very enjoyable. I mean, we had Damnation up next against Chris Brooks and Shumna Katsumata. And that whole thing was quite funny because the Damnation team was made up of Mad Paulie and Yuji Hino, two quite large men. I mean, Hino in particular is absolutely ginormous.
He's a unit, isn't he?
He is a unit, yeah. He looks like a fridge. And then, you know, you got Brooks, who's, you know, a tall man, but sleek. And Shumna, who's on the shorter side. And he was the one that took the majority of the beating in this one.
He really did take a bit of a beating from the Damnation team here. But you know, Shinma is someone who I really, really enjoy watching. Yeah. I think he's got a great look. If I remember correctly as well, Chris Brooks actually designed his shorts that he was wearing in this match.
Oh really? Oh, very good.
So I thought they made an interesting team, and it goes back to what we've previously said about Brooks, where he's just so skilled at forming an entertaining team with just about anybody that he teams with.
Yeah, the thing I noticed about that in this particular match was the level of interaction. And when I cast my mind back to other Brooks teams, be they more sustained teams or one-offs, that is something that is a consistent part of his game. He interacts with his partners during the match to let the audience in, and I think as a result you really do feel those teams in the moment.
At the start of the match he was complaining about teaming with Shinma, but they made it work.
They made it work. Well, they lost, but
yeah, well,
they
until
didn't really make
yeah.
it work.
Until poor Shinma took a gigantic powerbomb to be put away.
Oh god, yeah, that was absolutely brutal. Okay, next tag match had our friend of the show Takeshita. He was teaming up with Mao, who's fantastic, really, really impressive, against Harashima and Yukio Naya. And again, this was a really enjoyable tag team match. I really like the tandem of Takeshita and Mao. I think that works quite nicely.
It works brilliantly, doesn't it?
Takeshita's a big dude, and Mao is incredibly charismatic, but he's just super agile and super fast. And I thought the two contrasting skill sets really complemented each other.
Definitely, you know, and the finish here, I thought, was great, with Takeshita just hitting an absolutely wicked lariat and then Mao finishing off the match with his cannonball 450.
Yeah, it was really, really good stuff. That's a team I like, and I gather they've got a tag team title shot against the Eruption Boys up next.
That match is going to be taking place on the 23rd of the 2nd and is going to be the main event of that show.
Oh, that's going to be sweet. Eruption are fantastic. I mean, we're going to get onto them in a little bit.
They've just had a real great run between that and the six-man tag titles that they held for a while as well. You know, they've been doing great work with these tag titles.
Yeah. Okay, right. Let's keep some back for them. Next match, and this was a really interesting one. This is probably one of the ones I was most intrigued about, was the six-man between Jinretsu, which was Makoto Oishi and Mizuki Watase. Apologies for the usual butchering. And they were teaming with the debuting Yusuke Okada, who was stepping in for the injured Jun Akiyama. Okada, having recently moved across from All Japan, I believe he's working for DDT as a freelancer at present, but appears to be a very good addition to the roster. I thought he acquitted himself well. And they were against the Damnation trio of the returning Daisuke Sasaki, Nobuhiro Shimotani, and Tetsuya Endo.
Yeah, this was another fun one. Jun Akiyama should have been in this one and was made in advance of Jun, who had won the Dio Grand Prix. He's going to be going on to challenge Tetsuya Endo for his title in the future. Mm-hmm. So obviously in lieu of that, Okada stepped in. And so I think DDT English Update did say he wasn't sure whether Okada was a proper member of Junretsu, but time will tell, I suppose, as well.
What did you make of his contributions?
I really liked him. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. I thought he blended really well with his teammates here. It felt like they were a kind of fairly cohesive unit here.
Yeah.
If I'd have just watched not knowing that they weren't a regular team, I would have just assumed they were. Like, look and feel-wise, it just felt very natural.
Yeah, I think he seems like a good get for them, and I did see that Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter also commented on this Okada and saying what potential he has and what a high ceiling he has. So yeah, it does seem like a good pickup for DDT. All right, moving on up, KOD tag team title match, the aforementioned Eruption tandem of Kazusada Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi against Shima of the Strong Hearts and Soma Takao.
I really enjoyed seeing Seema and Soma, otherwise known as Beamer. Teaming here. Yeah. Lovely seeing them in their matching gear.
Yeah, really cool.
It'd be interesting to see if, post this tag team title defeat, whether they, you know, especially whether they've got the matching gear now, whether they do continue to being a regular team here in DDT.
Yeah, so Takao's not somebody I was that familiar with prior to this match, but again, following the updates on the DDT English update page, lifelong fan Ashima used to refer to himself as Beamer. As a result, we've all been there. I was D. Lee Brown when I wrestled. Yeah, you better recognize. And I thought they really blended nicely. And actually, he was a very exciting part of this match. I mean, I think there was one point where he was laying in, it felt like a million forearms in a row to one of the Eruption lads. I forget which one. And it was very, very cool. He seemed like a real good hand.
Definitely, yeah. So I thought another great defense for Eruption here.
They're so cool, aren't they?
Yeah, they just have a like great look. I like their little entrance video as well. And yeah, they always just seem just like the coolest cats, don't they?
Yeah, and it's an interesting one because we were talking about, you know, tag team wrestling not being a massive thing in Japan, you know, when we were referencing GOD's win at Wrestle Kingdom. But you could do worse than the Eruption boys.
Yeah.
They're really good.
It does feel like DDT, you know, has a pretty solid tag division. There's people you kind of, a lot of it is the same in the sense that it's stablemates teaming together.
Yeah.
Which, I, you know, just, it's just a different way of doing things, isn't it? I think where Japan is a much more kind of stable, heavy wrestling economy, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense that you see maybe two people that aren't necessarily guns blazing on for a singles title go on a tag team run.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Well, we did see the news a couple of weeks back that Kid Lykos is potentially returning to the ring, so if they can get him out to Japan, sign me up for some CCK action over in DDT.
Be very up for that.
Right. The main event time, and somebody that I'm really becoming a big fan of, and Yuki Ueno, he defended his Universal Championship against Shota.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Shota before, but apparently, you know, again, just following on from the DDT English update account talking him up, currently holds two other belts, was looking to become a triple champ here. Apparently very charismatic and just very entertaining. And yeah, I found him to be, despite not seeing him previously, he slotted in here in a main event match for me, no problem. You know, he sort of brought it against Yuki here, and I thought he had a good look. The sort of Eddie Guerrero-esque.
it's a good look. I feel like I've seen it before.
very Eddie Guerrero-esque.
Big time. Apparently he's a big fan of Eddie Guerrero, and his attire matched that big time. And so did his moveset, for that matter.
Yeah, hitting the frog splash.
Even hitting the slingshot somersault senton that Guerrero used to do so nicely, and Sasha Banks does as well sometimes. So yeah, very big on Eddie G, and why the hell not? He was, in fact, the man. But I wanted to talk about Ueno here, because previously we'd made the comparison to Kota Ibushi, and I think that one is valid, particularly in aesthetics and his leaping ability. You know, there's a lot of comparisons to be drawn here. But having watched this match in more detail, what I think actually is happening here is it's less that Ueno has been born out of Kota Ibushi, and more that he's been born out of the Golden Lovers collectively. Because if you watch his sort of first step explosivity, it's almost exactly like Kenny Omega. So it's almost like he's the perfect blend of the Golden Lovers.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so.
One of the things I just liked so much about this match is just there was just heaps and heaps of counters. You know, they were just hold for counter hold and reversal, and it just made for really entertaining viewing.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I mean, I put out a tweet after I'd finished watching this just saying, you know, you look at a DDT roster now, I really think the whole myth of it just being a comedy promotion, that's kind of got to go now. They've got so many top tier talents there, and Ueno's one of them. I really enjoyed Shota as well. But even if you look back at some of the guys we've spoken about already, you know, Brooks, Endo, Saki, Takeshita, Mao. I mean, we could go on.
Akiyama.
Jun Akiyama, for goodness sake. It really is a very impressive selection of some of Japan's perhaps less heralded wrestlers.
And I just think, more or less, all the people we just mentioned still have quite the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they've necessarily reached their peak.
Yeah, ton of upside. And one other thing that I was thinking as well, I mentioned a couple of shows back that my current dream match is Go Shiozaki from Noah against Kazuchika Okada from New Japan. Now, that's going to be a difficult one to put together, unfortunately. So, in the meantime, whilst they're under the same roof, how about we get Go Shiozaki versus Takeshita? What do you think about that?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Yes,
yeah, I'm into that idea.
Mr. Takagi, we are calling you.
One of the other matches that I don't know if you saw recently, Eddie Kingston's been talking about being desperate for a match with Jun Akiyama.
I did see that. Yeah, I did see that.
Touch wood when things have opened back up, that we could see that one happen.
Yeah, I'd love to see that happen.
Export Akiyama for a couple of matches in AEW, maybe?
Why ever not? Or bring Kingston into DDT.
Either, yeah, I'd be happy either way.
Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah.
Wherever that match happens.
Yeah, for sure. Yep, so good stuff there. Really enjoyed that show. Another strong outing for DDT, and we're going to be back with them next month on Valentine's Day is Kawasaki Strong, with some of the matches that Gareth already mentioned, but headlined by Jun Akiyama's challenge against KOD champion Tetsuya Endo.
We'll also see Ueno defending that Universal title that he retained against Sakaguchi on that show as well.
Ooh, okay. See, plenty to talk about already. Mouth-watering stuff. All right, so elsewhere, we also checked out New Japan Strong, the most recent edition of this one. And if I can just start off on this one, G, you know, previously when we've talked about Strong, I think we've spoken about them twice now, been sort of quick to highlight some of the issues there. I think there's some production issues, doesn't necessarily jump off the screen and grab you, and sometimes feels a bit like wrestling in a vacuum. But I thought, and perhaps it's me growing used to it, but from a production standpoint, it felt brighter. There was more going on in terms of camera work, and overall, I was far more engaged. But from a storyline perspective, this show was full of noteworthy moments. It was far less wrestling in a vacuum, and actually a huge amount to get your teeth into. I thoroughly enjoyed this show.
Absolutely. I think it is a combination of things. I think where New Japan Strong has had time to kind of breathe and grow. It's kind of developed its own little ecosystem.
Yes.
So, you know, there is, what, it's 22 episodes deep now, but there is some history to draw from there. And I think they've put together a good group of guys there. You know, it's a much more complete roster than it was in the early days, maybe when we've previously covered it.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
And they're continuing to add to that roster as well with the addition of one of the debuting stars here, creating Chris Dickinson.
Absolutely. Okay, well, why don't you give us a rundown of the card and we'll go from there.
So we kicked off with Kevin Knight making his debut on the show as well. He's a LA Dojo young lion taking on Clark Connors, another young lion.
The captain.
Head of the class, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just think, again, this makes it feel like a real New Japan show,
mm-hmm.
opening with two young lions going at it.
They're bloody good, though, aren't they, these?
Well, what often makes young lions matches so enjoyable is just every move matters.
Do you know what I was thinking when I was watching this was, you know, every time I've read sort of an old timer having a pop at a high spot and I've rolled my eyes. And then as they've told me that, you know, if you really labor on a headlock, it's going to be good. And you think, oh, great, that sounds fun. And that's exactly what this is. And that's exactly what young lion matches are. And even if you cast your mind back to the G1 of last year, the quote unquote C block was very, very entertaining. And they're only using a handful of moves. There really is something to it. And I felt that in this one. I think at one point Knight put a headlock on Connors. And I really winced and thought, oh, God damn it, I've just played right into their hands there, haven't I? But in all seriousness, this was really good. It was super intense. Connors has got to be approaching graduation, hasn't he?
You'd think so.
Hmm.
I'd be really interested to see, obviously, you could graduate him and send him out on excursion in the sense that he could potentially start working MLW,
yeah.
He could work Impact, he could work GCW. Obviously not the usual excursion, but there's definitely places out elsewhere he could kind of work and develop his character before coming back to New Japan Strong, or even continue on New Japan Strong before making a New Japan debut proper.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to hear more from Clark Connors, the interview that we spoke about last week is now up on the website. It's really interesting, gives us a bit of an insight to what it's like as a young lion in the LA Dojo, but also his kind of aspirations and where he wants to take things after that. I thoroughly enjoyed it, so I hope you check it out. It's on itrwrestling.com/interviews.
And then after that one, so that match ended with a massive spear from Connors and getting the submission with the old Boston Crab, the traditional finisher of the Young Lions. Mm. We went on to the DKC taking on Rocky Romero.
Yeah, and this was great. I mean, this is the best I've seen the DKC.
Yes. Yeah, in my notes I put just a really good showing from DKC here.
Yeah.
I do think you'd be hard-pressed to have a bad match against Rocky Romero at the moment, though.
Yeah, he's on form, isn't he?
Yeah, and I'm really hoping once the world opens back up, Kevin Kelly has just got me, from his commentary, he's got me exactly champing at the bit. He's got me champing at the bit for Rocky making a run at that junior heavyweight title now.
Yeah, he's got to win it, hasn't he? It'd be so good if he wins it.
I think that would be a good way to go. And then there's options there. You know, you could let him go on a tear, or you could even end that quickly, have Show beat him for it or something.
Yeah, it could be a transitional thing, but either way I want to see his name in the record books.
Absolutely. Yeah, so good showing here, but the veteran prevailed with the armbar.
Yeah, interesting stuff in the post-match, though. Again, as we were saying, this whole show is just laden with story. So the DKC takes the mic. He's pretty upset about the whole thing and pretty much pleads for Katsuyori Shibata to come out and accept him into the LA Dojo to train him to improve. And sure enough, out comes Shibata. And I don't know why. There's always something slightly emotional about seeing Shibata. Do you know what I mean? He's like a Mewtwo or something. When you see a Mewtwo, you're like, oh my God. And,
like a sighting in the wild.
It is. And, out he comes, shakes the DKC's hand, get rid of that microphone. We didn't need that. And hey, I'm a badass. And, just says, follow me. And
he's in.
Oh, and off we go. So great stuff. Really excited to see where that storyline goes. Immediately more invested in the DKC. And actually, this is very good stuff.
The thing that made this show interesting is just each step of the way, there was a reason to be invested in every match.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the absolute opposite of where we started. But now there's constant progress, which is very exciting.
So again, I haven't been a regular viewer of Strong. It tends to be just when I know we're going to be... Yeah, we plan to talk about it. I will check it out. But this one has got me thinking, I think I'm going to make a point of checking this out week to week now rather than waiting until something happens or I hear something good about a particular match.
Yeah, same here. It's the main event time. And we had Tom Lawler actually open the show by a video to kind of write out Rust Taylor. Last time I'm going to have to struggle with that name. Signed to WWE now, so no more Rust.
Lawler even alludes to that in the promo, just saying, you're out of the team, go on vacation to Florida.
Yeah, I love Lawler, he's so great. So in this match, it was Danny Limelight and JR Kratos and X, or that's kind of the Japanese way of saying a mystery partner. So who is it going to be? Who's Tom Lawler recruited to take on the team of Brody King and the Regal Twins? None other than the Dirty Daddy, Chris Dickinson. And this one's been a long time coming, I think.
Yeah, Dickinson's been, I think, one of the top flight indie guys for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's felt like a matter of time until he was kind of picked up somewhere. But from listening to him speak, it sounds like he was determined to get into New Japan by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
And he's finally done it.
And what a debut he made. Very impressive indeed. You've heard the term knife-edge chops. Well, I think it was Sterling Regal, one of the Regal twins, was the recipient of several knife-edge chops from Chris Dickinson, and they quite literally cut his chest open. Ooh. So confirmed here on the wrestling podcast, Chris Dickinson has knives for hands.
Ridiculous.
It may not make it to itrwrestling.com.
One of the things, other things, beyond Dickinson just looking great here, I'm really enjoying Danny Limelight as a trash-talking heel.
So smart. I watched an interview with him speaking with Sean Ross Sapp, I think it was earlier in the week, and he was talking about having learnt all the nuances of performing for camera, knowing where the camera is and making yourself heard. And he's done such a clever thing here because nobody else was doing that, and it immediately stood out. I'm pretty, you know, I thought exactly the same thing. You know, he's in there talking smack and making a bit of a fuss of himself, and yeah, really just helped him stand out in a sea of talented guys. So yeah, clever stuff from Limelight.
Yeah, and I think this match as well, it established more as well. Like, it's not just a one and done thing here.
No.
There was further stuff coming out of this match. You know, Brody King post match carried on attacking Kratos. Mm. So, you know, I think we're gonna see more there, and absolutely another massive lariat on one of the Regals, from followed up with a real nasty looking Death Valley driver from Chris Dickinson to pick up his first win in New Japan.
Yeah, really good stuff, and I can't wait to see him do more there, to be honest with you. One thing I did think, though, is once borders are open and it's safe to travel around, I think it would do New Japan Strong the world of good to have some of the strong guys, so the guys that haven't already been in New Japan proper, compete over in Japan. I think it would help sort of validate them a little bit, and, you know, for the casual viewer, it would fold them in to the tapestry of New Japan, mm-hmm. as opposed to being this sort of outpost in LA. You know, you look at the Regal Twins as an example. There's no reason why they couldn't be competing in the junior heavyweight tag tournament that happens every year.
Yeah, it
makes
exactly.
perfect sense. You know,
I'm not suggesting that they necessarily all need to be out there for every tour.
No, not
but,
at all.
You know, once or twice a year or something, just so they are part of the wider New Japan ecosystem.
Yeah, absolutely. But really good stuff from Strong. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Looking forward to dipping back in next week. And we move.
And we're back. So in this half of the show, we're going to be covering Impact's Genesis event. So this was built around the returning Super X Cup tournament. Previously held by Chris Sabin, Samoa Joe and Desmond Xavier, makes its return for 2021 with an 8-man field. Highlighted by Ace Austin, Suicide, Blake Christian, Casey Navarro, Cousin Jake, Daivari, Crazy Steve, and Trey Lamar. So a number of these talents have come in, are not regular Impact stars, which I think made for a really interesting tournament and is reminiscent of the early days of Impact / TNA, where you'd have kind of unsigned X Division people kind of competing in, you know, the Super X Cup, and they did like the I think the World X Cup League.
Mm. I used to love those. Called. Yeah.
Just you'd end up with like loads of people you'd never heard before, and, you know, always go away impressed. Mm. Yeah, and this was no different. I thought I really liked the way they did this here. So you had obviously the favorite in Ace Austin doing the deal, making it to the final, going through Suicide in the opening match and going through Cousin Jake in the second to make it to the final. And they had the other finalist was Blake Christian, who went through Casey Navarro and Crazy Steve to make it to the final. And yeah, I really enjoyed. So the top three matches on this show, the I Quit match between Willie Mack and Moose, the X Cup tournament final of Ace Austin and Blake Christian, and the knockouts match of Jordan Grace taking on Jazz, were real highlights. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've spoken before about Impact shows and them being top heavy, and it's perhaps no surprise to regular listeners that the top three matches here delivered. But I suppose the difference with this show is that the rest of the show was of a decent quality and an ascending quality as well. You know, it did seem to get progressively better as the show went on. Whereas in previous shows we discussed, it's felt a little bit flat, and it's taken a real uptick at, you know, sort of towards the business end of the card. But I think this one was far more consistent, and it was a really enjoyable night of wrestling.
Definitely. So for me, this has been my favorite card that I've seen Impact present since I've returned to viewing them regularly.
Oh wow, gosh, yeah, okay.
Just because there was nothing here that had me shaking my head.
Yeah.
Or
sure.
Had me disinterested, had me, you know, going off and making a cup of tea or whatever. Like, I was invested in kind of every beat of this show. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think probably helped is none of my most maligned Impact stars were on this show. On top of that, there was no wonky booking. There was no silly production errors, like unforced errors that previously, when we've kind of watched the last pay-per-view of theirs, there were some silly production errors, and I found that quite frustrating. Whereas here, I think they had it all pretty neatly tied up, mm-hmm. and it just flowed really well. like you say, the opening round matches were decent, and then the semi-final matches were better, and then the final was really good. You know, so it's how a kind of, you know, a card should build gradually. One of the other things that really worked for me that was in the bulk of these matches, it was the more interesting talent going over, winning the match, and advancing. You know, so I think if it had been the opposite, you'd had Suicide beating Austin and Daivari beating Cousin Jake, I would have probably been...
We're in trouble.
Yeah, I would have been much less engaged, you know. But as it is, it gave Cousin Jake and it gave Ace Austin and, you know, gave all these stars, Crazy Steve and Blake Christian match, you know, with Blake Christian going over there, it kind of gave them all... It just made them all look really, really good. Having the more interesting characters go over the more established, potentially more established characters... is just the way this kind of thing should be booked, I think.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the tournament overall. I thought it was a success. Something, you know, I think Impact would benefit from running fairly regularly.
Definitely.
Like, it's kind of just a fun thing.
Particularly in the January slot as well. It's a good way to kick
absolutely.
Things off.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really liked Blake Christian making it all the way to the final. I like that you had, from either side of the bracket, so you had the favourite versus somebody that's all heart, Blake Christian, yeah, the underdog in the tournament, making it to the final, just told a really good story.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, a note on Blake Christian, you know, when I'd seen him previously, undeniably a good worker, but struggled to find something to latch onto with him outside of the work rate. But here, where he's given a bit of an opportunity to talk and give a bit of background to his character and just generally a bit of room to breathe in the matches, really got behind him. And I think he's an absolutely perfect fit for this X division. I'd be amazed if Impact don't make a play for him.
I think it'd be a real shame if they let him slip through their fingers.
Yeah, 100%. Also, really nice to see Cousin Jake getting a bit of time as well. He's somebody that I think could do more in Impact, and I think he probably will this year. But he was enjoyable here. And of course, Ace Austin, we've spoken about him before, such a wonderful performer, so great in the ring, but brilliant with the character stuff as well, like a really complete wrestler, particularly for his age. Amazing. And that final, Austin against Blake Christian, was very, very good indeed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, wonderful, wasn't it? And one of the things I noticed during this match that I really like was that Blake Christian's two biggest shots, the two moves that he'd used to win his previous two matches, he missed with both of those, unfortunately. But those were his sort of two magic bullets, so to speak. If he'd managed to hit either of those, the match could very well have gone the other way. But Ace Austin is obviously pretty smart and had those scouted and got out of the way of those, and, you know, managed to pick up the win here with the fold out of nowhere.
Yeah, I really like Blake Christian's top rope finisher. I don't know what it's called.
No,
and I've never seen anything quite like it. It's almost as if he is doing like a pencil dive and the wind takes him and it sort of spins him a little bit. It's really nice to watch. Very graceful. It's
kind of like a corkscrew splash, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. If a tissue was to do a corkscrew splash, you know, there's a sort of, there's a degree of calmness about it, which is quite interesting.
But either way, it looks really nice.
It looks special. Yeah. Good stuff, Blake. Elsewhere, Jordan Grace versus Jazz. This was good stuff. Really enjoyed this match.
Felt very much like they were just knocking the crap out of each other.
Yeah. The pace of this one, again, was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah. It didn't feel its 12-odd minutes.
No.
It just flew by for me, this one.
That's a bit of a hallmark of Jordan Grace matches, I think. I'm going to start calling it Jordan Pace.
<'Cause>, that's stupid.
But genuinely, she does seem to work at quite a high speed. Not in the sense that everything's boom, 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 and it's too fast, but just the general feel of the thing is quite alive and quite frenetic, and it makes for exciting matches. And Jazz was somebody that I used to really enjoy back in ECW, and then more so in WWE, really. So it was lovely to see her get a last hurrah here on a big-ish show against a really talented opponent. I just thought it was really nicely done overall.
Watching this, it got me thinking. I was just like, how long has Jazz been doing this well? Like, she's been in wrestling, I think, as long, if not longer, than I've been a fan.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, I'm sure I saw her many moons ago, like, and I realized I'd seen her wrestle for the women's title at WrestleMania 18.
Oh, wow.
When I went to Toronto.
Very cool.
It's crazy to think nearly 20 years on, she's still wrestling at a very high level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, albeit desperate to get on her retirement tour now, seemingly. But...
she just wants to call it a day.
Yeah. I really think Jordynne Grace is one of my favourite wrestlers overall.
Mm.
She's just so unique, isn't she?
She just has that X factor, doesn't she?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
And speaking of X factor, seeing her here on this show with the Super X Cup, it just has reinforced my belief that I just really want to see her in the X Division.
Yeah, you're so right. Yeah, Jordynne Grace versus Ace Austin is the match. Sorry, Rohit. This is the one, you know. So get the belt off Rohit. Let's move that on. He's wonderful, but let's just move it on. Ace Austin versus Jordynne Grace. That is the match I want to see.
Very much so.
Nice. Okay. Main event time, the I Quit match. Willimack, a moose. The second straight show that Impact has main evented with two African-American wrestlers, interestingly.
Yes. I did pick up on that as well. Yeah. And great to see here that I said on our live Twitter feed that when we're watching the show, because we were sort of sharing the duties throughout the show. This one.
And thanks very much if you joined us on that. Really appreciated the interaction.
It's a lot of fun.
It was a good time. Yeah, we'll do it more often.
But I think this was probably my favourite outing I've seen from both men.
Yeah, I completely agree. Completely agree.
It built really nicely, had some absolutely wild moves sort of sprinkled throughout it as well, and unusual finish.
I love the finish.
For an I Quit match.
It was the coolest thing. So different.
It could very easily have not worked, but it really worked given the storyline they've been building.
Yeah, definitely. So if you haven't seen the match, it's an absolutely brutal back and forth affair, goes the best part of half an hour. But towards the end, Moose has kind of got Willie Mack's number, and he's got him prone on the deck with the chair around his neck, looking to pilmanize him quite permanently by the looks of it, and outruns the current Impact champion, Rich Swann, who's desperately trying to beg Moose off to save his friend Willie Mack. And Moose fairly casually says, "If you give me what I want..."
Channeling Batista.
Yeah, I'll knock it out.
Give me what I want.
Give me what I want, goddammit. And Swann is quick to acquiesce. He says that Moose can have a title shot. And Moose just so calmly said, "Thank you, I quit." It was the best way to do it. The delivery was great.
Yeah.
It was really...
Delivery was great.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
I think had the match on the whole not been so strong, you could be forgiven for being a bit cross at what you could call like a bit of a cop-out ending. Mm-hmm. But given the brutality of the match and the sort of storyline leading up to it, it just all fell together really nicely.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, from a visual perspective, the match was done. You know, you weren't in any doubt who would have won that match had that not been the finish. You know, Moose had won. That was it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So you lost nothing there. And I just thought it was a really unique way of doing it. Be interested to see if it would have worked in front of a live audience or if it was another beneficiary of this no fans environment.
I think you're quite right. It maybe would have probably fallen flat in front of a live crowd. Yeah. Now you mentioned that, but it as a sort of televisual thing, and I think watching at home, like as a drama, it really worked.
Yeah, and I think it's exciting that companies are starting to pick up on things like that, taking advantage of the situation as opposed to being hamstrung by it.
It really feels like what's going on here. So, you know, I don't know what's going on. Has Impact turned a corner, do you think?
Well, we'll find out next week because we're with Impact again for Hard to Kill, but we're going to tell you guys about that in a second. But yeah, fingers crossed.
Do you think being hooked up with AEW has kind of given them the kick up the ass they need to get things on the right track?
Look, mate, here's the thing. You have to bear in mind, Impact at one point was a huge deal. And even today, if you look at, I think it's on the Facebook follow account, they've got over double the followers that AEW has. And that's a sort of hangover from, you know, when they were at their peak. Because of all the issues they've had with their management, the current setup of, you know, Scott D'Amore, Don Callis, and the Anthem team have had an absolute mountain to climb to get over this huge branding issue. But with this link up with AEW, it's the best opportunity they're ever going to get to get over that hump, if you will.
Have that renewed goodwill come back their way.
If this doesn't work, it's not going to work. So, I think you could be right. I think that may have been the shot that they needed, and I'm very, very excited for Hard to Kill next week.
Like, I'm just keeping everything crossed that Hard to Kill knocks it out of the park. Yeah. I really want it to just be a huge, huge, huge success.
Across the board. I have no doubt that main event's going to be brilliant. Taya Valkyrie against Deonna Purrazzo. That's going to be really good. But we need the other stuff to work as well. It does look like a strong card. Fingers crossed, I'm pulling for them.
So I think that's just about everything to discuss from Genesis. So on to the news. And we're back with our roundup of this week's news. Starting back in Impact, this Saturday there's going to be a new commentary team taking the duties at the booth. Bam.
You're looking at the real deal now. Sweet.
I knew you'd be real into this. D'Lo Brown is going to be taking over duties along with Matt Stryker.
My favourite. How cool is this?
I think this is a really smart move. Yeah. One of the complaints that I've seen sort of quite a lot about Impact currently has been Josh Matthews and Madison Rayne in the booth. This will freshen that up and hopefully make a difference to the production.
Yeah, I don't think they're necessarily bad, but a fresh coat of paint here is probably the right thing, particularly with the renewed vigour behind the Impact brand. So yeah, good shout. Really excited to see D'Lo and Matt Stryker, see what they can bring to the table.
Definitely. And so the final lineup for this Saturday's Hard to Kill is going to be headlined by Kenny Omega, Karl Anderson and Doc Gallows, taking on Rich Swann and the Motor City Machine Guns of Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley.
Wow.
Which should be fantastic. Really looking forward to that one. The X Division title is going to be on the line with champion Manic taking on Chris Bay and Rohit Raju. For the Knockouts title, we've got champion Deonna Purrazzo taking on Taya Valkyrie. For the vacant, newly reactivated Knockouts tag team titles, we've got Havoc and Vaya taking on Kira Hogan and Tasha Steelz. And then we've also got Eric Young, Dina and Joe Doring taking on Cousin Jake, Rhino and Tommy Dreamer in an old school rules match. In another what's sure to be very bloody brawl, we've got Eddie Edwards taking on Sammy Callahan, continuing their rivalry in a barbed wire massacre match. And then finally we've got the Karate Man taking on Ethan Page.
It's quite an eclectic card. I do think it's strong. I'm intrigued by it.
The old school rules match could go either way, and the Karate Man Ethan Page match, depending on how that is produced, could go either way. But yeah, I think the rest should all be very interesting and at the very least enjoyable.
Yeah, for sure.
Keeping everything crossed for them. Also, just a reminder, we're going to be covering Hard to Kill next week on the show. We're being joined by ITR's own Gary Cassidy to talk about that.
Yep. When we say the GC, we're not referring to Gemma Collins of the Anywhere's Essex fame. We're talking about ITR lead writer Gary Cassidy, who's going to be joining us. And Gary's had a huge amount to do with Impact. He's done a lot of interviews with Impact. He's going to have some really great insights. So I'm really excited to hear Gary's thoughts on the show.
Definitely.
Cool. Okay, so to Major League Wrestling next, we've got new tag team champions in Los Parks. That's LA Park and El Hijo de LA Park. They defeated Marshall and Ross Van Erich in a Tornado tag team match on the Selena De La Renta produced edition of Fusion. Tom Lawler was special guest referee. Yes, indeed, he is everywhere, is Filthy. The Von Erichs actually held the belts since November 2019. That's a hell of a title reign for quite a young team there. So, yeah, good stuff. And I like seeing Los Parks back with Selena, particularly now that she's got Mil Muertes as well. She works really well as the figurehead of a stable. I'm actually amazed she's still within the wrestling universe. I mean, wrestling without the E-universe, because she's so, so good and could do big things wherever she wants to go. But nice to still have her here, that's for sure. And speaking of Muertes, he debuted as well, defeating Brian Pillman Jr. There appears to be something of a collision of the worlds of MLW and Lucha Underground coming here. So there's more teases at the end of this show. It's quite interesting, and you know, look, there's a lot of goodwill towards Lucha Underground, I think. It's particularly something that no longer exists. You know, fans slightly pine after some of its stronger moments, and I, for one, would like to see some of those revisited. And when you consider that MLW do have a working relationship with AAA, the likes of Drago, for example, Aerostar, both of whom were a big part of Lucha Underground, they are available. They could be involved here, so I think there's some really interesting things that could be done here, so I'm quite excited to see where this one goes.
And then in Ring of Honor, they have continued announcing their spate of re-signings. So joining the previously announced list is Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, Brian Johnson, and Sumi Sakai. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, one person they haven't been able to re-sign as of yet, former ROH World Champion Dalton Castle, is currently a free agent and is apparently exploring his options.
Yeah, interesting one there. Where would you like to see Dalton go?
I'm not sure. Like, is there much left for him to do in Ring of Honor, do you think?
I don't know that there is, to be honest with you. I could see how a change of scenery might benefit him.
So I think time will tell on that front, but we'll keep you up to date with the latest on that one as it developed.
Absolutely. Okay, going over to New Japan now, and the New Japan Cup is going to be back in March. It's returning to its usual spring schedule. It's going to run from March 5th to March 21st. And in interesting news, following his intriguing post-match comments at Wrestle Kingdom, Jay White has had his profile removed from New Japan's websites, fueling the speculation that he's actually leaving. Now, I've heard contrasting reports on this one. Some people say they actually signed a 7-year deal, which he's somewhere in the middle of right now. So this is all just one big giant story. Whatever's going on, it's very interesting, and it's made Jay White kind of the man to watch. So I'm all for it.
Excited to see how this one shakes out.
Yep.
One of the more interesting parts of New Japan at the moment, because he's only been back as an active participant from very late this year, so it's been really exciting to have him back on the scene. So it'd be a shame to kind of lose him from the New Japan scene.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And whilst we're talking about New Japan, we did run a poll on our Twitter account, that's at WrestlingPod, where we asked which one of the 4 5-star Dave Meltzer approved matches from Wrestle Kingdom did you think was the best. And confirming now that the overwhelming favourite was the main event from night one, which was Tetsuya Naito's defeat to the new double champion Kota Ibushi. A worthy winner, indeed.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. What a match.
What a match. Good lord. And yeah, spoiler alert, that's going to be my Fave 5 pick as well. So yeah, it's getting all the love.
I'm not surprised.
No, no. Okay, elsewhere in Japan, there's going to be a giant Baba Memorial show at Korakuen Hall in February. This card is going to feature talent from a variety of companies. A couple of headline names for you: Jinsei Shinzaki, quite exciting. Kataro Suzuki from Pro Wrestling Noah. Minoru Suzuki is going to be on the card. Yuji Nagata, Kaz Hayashi, Kojima, Keiji Muto, and many, many more. So great stuff. Looking forward to that one. Okay, so that pretty much does it for this week. As Gareth alluded to, we've got Gary Cassidy joining us next week to cover Impact Wrestling's Hard to Kill. And on the other half of the show, we're going to be going somewhere a little bit different. We're going to be looking at Pro Wrestling Magic's Kingdom Come show. Now, this is going to be really interesting. Pro Wrestling Magic, not a company that I've heard of. They're based in the States. I've got a really interesting looking roster. A couple of names I'll read out to you now. So Casey Navarro, who appeared on the Impact show we were talking about. Ace Romero is another one. And also Azriel from the early, early Ring of Honor days. Now, I haven't seen this man since, what are we talking about, sort of 2004, 2003?
Yeah.
Really intrigued to see what he's up to now. So yeah, looking forward to covering this one. Something a bit different.
Just off of the beaten track a little bit for us.
Yep. But that's what we're all about, baby. That's what we're all about. So in the meantime, if you want more wrestling-related news, you can follow us on all the socials. We're at WrestlingPod on Twitter and on Instagram. That's Wrestling without the E. There's a show, there's a wrestler, there's anything that we aren't talking about that you think we should be, then why not send us an email? It's wrestlingpod@gmail.com. For your news and updates, you can check out itrwrestling.com. You find myself and Gareth populating the Elsewhere in Japan news. And why not have a hard copy just for the smell of that magazine, that beautiful print, insidetheropesmagazine.com. If you want to rep your boys, you can do so with some merch. Go to www.shop.itrwrestling.com. We got mugs, t-shirts, hoodies, all with the coolest logo in town. Rock one of those, send us a tweet, let us know you're wearing it. It'll make our day. Anyway, for G and me, we are out. So, in the meantime, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the grabs.